둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
What's up, dude?
What's up, old buddy?
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, checking out the episode. I hope you subscribe to the series. I put out three new interviews every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can do so with all the usual spots, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, Audible, Red Circle, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, The Lone Bellow, going to be talking with Zach, Kaneen, and Brian about their brand new record called Love Songs for Losers. We'll discuss the small-town American opioid crisis that plays into the lead single Gold, taking some inspiration from Mellencamp's Jack and Diane, as well as Springsteen. They're also going to tell us about self-producing the record in Roy Orbison's former house and the spirits that inhabit that space, writing about family, and we'll hear how the song Dreaming, lovely song, actually has a little bit of a backdrop of Brian getting beaten up and lost in New York City. All that and a whole lot more. It's a fun one. Let's talk about Love Songs for Losers. It's Kyle Meredith with The Lone Bellow.
Hello!
It's great to see y'all again. You got a new record.
Yeah.
Now, this is some good stuff. Love Songs for Lovers. I mean, I'm always a fan of what you all do.
Oh, Love Songs for Losers.
Losers. What did I say? Yeah. Lovers?
Yeah.
So that makes a difference right there, because Love Songs for Lovers is very different from Love Songs for Losers.
It could be lovers that are losers as well.
Loser Songs for Lovers is...
Yeah.
Loose songs.
Anyway, it's such a good record. I really mean that every single time, but this one seems extra special.
Dude, thank you. That means a lot.
And coming off the heels, I was looking back because it wasn't until I was reading, maybe it was a press release or something like that, but talking about, like, you know, doing a record like this even after 10 years, and I thought, holy cow, has it been almost 10 years since we met each other on the roof in Austin? That was like a decade ago. That's kind of insane to me.
It was so hot. I still remember how hot it was. And I still have the free headphones they gave us.
Oh, I do too.
Oh, so do I. We all I don't think we were supposed to walk out of there with those, but we all still have them. So that's...
I love those. I use them all the time.
I think I took two pair.
Are you listening, Sony? Are you listening? Are you watching?
Sony is our record label. We need to take everything we can from them.
Wow.
Oh, but seriously, all right, Love Songs for Losers. Let's start there, because it is a funny title. I know that might be an obvious point, but where did that come from? Who came up with that one?
Well, you know, it was the working title in the studio while we were making the record. I had written love songs down, and then Canine like walked by one day and just wrote "For Losers." And after we made the record, after we made the record and we were like mixing it and stuff, we were trying to figure out what we were going to name it. We had a few other names and they just were not as strong as that. And it stuck. And I think one of the reasons that it stuck is because there's some like honest love songs on this record, which, as you know, we haven't done that much of. We've written love songs, but sometimes they're a little harder to read between the lines. Whereas this one is just like, bam, here we go. And then we definitely see ourselves as the losers in this situation. So, so it was like, let's name the record this for us. This is our inside joke. And then now it's everyone's inside joke.
But at some point, does it have to represent like the songs as a group in that sense?
I think there's a theme.
There's a little thread. They're not all love songs. I mean, the first single that we released, when the label was like, this is the single, we were like, dude, did you listen carefully to the words? But anyway.
Yeah. Well, and we'll go ahead and bring that one up then. Gold, for everything that it's not in what we're talking about, it still becomes a powerful song. And maybe I'm generalizing, and of course I am taking a little bit from what I've read so far, but how the opioid crisis sort of becomes part of this. I'm from a small town in Kentucky, and when I go back there, man, it's you just see it everywhere.
Ours too. And I think that's why we wrote this song from the perspective of someone like addicted to opioids and caught in the storm of it all, and then just like trying to maybe revisit the small town America story, but like where it's at currently. So that's what was like Main Street on the auction block kind of thing.
But for some reason, like the gold, the way the person, like lending the pen to the person that's in the addiction, he's actually sees, it's kind of hopeful in a weird way. Like he sees the gold and where he's from, and that maybe it's not over for them. Maybe there's a good future for him. You know what I mean? So I've always seen like him, maybe there's another side of it. You know what I mean?
But yeah. It's funny because we wrote it together and I always saw the gold as like, it's in my blood, it's in the water, it's calling me. I could leave, I know I oughta, but there's gold in them hills. So I always saw the gold as the opioid, as the drug, as the addiction, but you saw it differently.
I just have so much respect. Like, it's happening more now, but like, we always all thought we had to move to New York City or Nashville or LA to like make it. And I feel like it's spreading out to where like there's people in Augusta, Georgia, or Knoxville, Tennessee. And hopefully that spreads out to small towns because we do have the internet and we can go that. So like maybe there is a future there. So like I feel like that person is one of those people that wants to stay and see it better, even though they're like in the middle of it. You know what I mean? But you know, it's funny how two people write it. And if the other writer, he'd probably have a different perspective too, you know?
No, he has no perspective.
It's such an interesting Curtis sort of, I'm going to go further into this hole just for a moment, if you all will, but almost the, whatever you call the sociological part of this too, because I see the people who they know the culture is bad around them, but of course they won't leave, maybe because there's the gold in the hills, but you know, for whatever reason, it's like, you know, it's the toxic relationship. But I appreciate this, like nothing wrong with a song like Jack and Diane and that version of Small Town America, but this is so much more honest and real, and how it happens, you know, as its own sort of sociological study, because you know, the heartland is supposed to be, you know, the easy going part, but this is the stuff that grips it. It feels like even more. Yeah.
Yeah. And we definitely had the Jack and Diane in mind. And also,
I'm always thinking
Small Town Saturday Night.
Yeah. And Bruce Springsteen, you know, it's also like what you're saying too, like if you watch someone's documentaries about the opioid crisis and the Sackler family, like they literally like pick these small places to start trying their drug out. it's crazy. And I don't want to get into all that because it's not supposed to be like a political thing. But I think it is a fun, it's a good thing for us to like be thinking about, like, is this how can we get to the other side of it for sure. Sorry, I lost train of thought for a second.
Sorry.
Anyway.
All that aside, it's a beautiful song, and there are beautiful songs all throughout this record. Canino, I'll bring up yours while we're here, because Cost of Living, you know, is another one of those. It probably, I don't know, just the title of it, you know, could be co-opted into the conversation that we're talking about here, but how does that fit within the record, within all the stuff that we're discussing?
Oh, I mean, that song really fits in with the whole Loser title, because I think it's just about being blindsided by something that you should have seen coming and trying to like hold on to things that you should really let go of. And you know, I have a few of those things that I struggle with, but yeah, that's, it's kind of one of those songs just about like grief and trying to move on but not wanting to move on from the thing that really made your life feel like it was worth living.
See, that's not so far away from what we're talking about with people getting stuck in small towns. Like, it's that connection. But again, there's that sort of toxic relationship with how we have relationships with anything, I think. But
oh, we're really good at toxic relationships.
Toxicity.
We actually celebrate that. That's a love language.
Yes.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with The Lone Bellow. What was I reading? Of course, this is self-produced, but what was it that you're also like in charge of vocals? Is that different than how you've done it in the past? Like putting someone sort of as the point person?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to vocal produce the group in a more, I don't know, just authoritative way.
That was the right adjective.
I'd say like in the studio, everybody has a capacity for different things that they'll like go down a rabbit hole forever. And it's like, Brian will chase the guitar tone for 10 hours while everyone else
everything
is like, hey man, can you like do something else? So vocals, he does not have that patience for, but I do. And I will, I think the beautiful thing after singing with people for over 10 years is that you know all of these intricacies of their vocals and what they can do. And I really just wanted to plumb those depths and get the best takes that I know that they're capable of if they just try. So that was fun.
Authoritative.
Yeah, I think it's almost extra interesting that you're doing this in Roy Orbison's former house, because you've got one of the greatest vocalists of all time and you're talking about vocals. How did that play the parts in all of this? Because I'm sure that's its own aura in itself.
Yeah. 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 We were given his house for several weeks to make this record. And I mean, there's such a spirit there. I mean, first of all, it's the second house that the same builder built. The first house was the one that burned down, that his sons died in the fire. I can't believe that he was like, called the same guy and was like, hey, will you build me another one? But it was also, you know, it's right next to Johnny Cash's burned down house, who the same guy also built that one. And it just, it had just so much power. It's like a 6,000 square foot cabin, basically, on the lake. And it used to be the pool house, and is just really, really beautiful during the day and peaceful, and then really creepy and at night, which was a great, just yin and yang.
We all spent the night there. We all stayed there for a couple of weeks. It was awesome. We got all in it.
Just lean into the whole feeling of it.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I want to hit also on a couple of the tracks here. The album opens up with Honey. And as I read again about how it's like your wife didn't like to be called Honey or Babe. Did the song Unicorn kind of make up for that? Did that balance it out?
Yeah.
She loves being called Unicorn.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, the first time she heard the lyrics to Honey, she was like, oh, you're finally being honest about something. no, I'm just kidding. She's a spicy meatball. She loved Unicorn from the very first second she heard it. I was playing like the really bad demo in the car while we were driving somewhere. And she was like, who is this? And I was like, it's Alone Bello. It's me. She was like, wait, I like this song. I was like, what does that mean? So
because all your other ones.
So she loves Honey and Unicorn and Win.
Nice to have that in your back pocket always as a talent.
Yeah, well, and bring it up during an argument or whatever. Yeah.
and I want one more song, Dreaming. This song sounds like it could have came from a different era. Like there's something, there's magic in that song too. Where did that come from?
Me and Zach wrote that song years ago in LA during a thunderstorm in LA. It was a monsoon.
In Phoenix.
I was in LA. It was in LA. Anyway, I remember the time because we wrote Hollywood too. We wrote Hollywood too at the same time in this Airbnb. Anyway, it sat in the Dropbox. It's one of my favorite things that happens on a record, honestly. It sat in the Dropbox forever. And I was always, every time
we had a completely different melody.
Yeah, yeah. Every time a record we start talking about doing a record, I would bring it back up because I love the song. And I love how honest the verses are and just how like conversational they are. There's no like prose or anything. It's just like conversational. The first week I was in the house, because we had the house for like 8 weeks and we did it. There was like three records made while we had the house. But the first night I was at the house, I was playing that song and I played it that way. And it was like, almost like Roy was like, play it this way. And I was like, I really loved it. I didn't even want to share it with them because I thought they'd say no. And I was like, I think we should record this song. And they both were like, yes. Of course. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, great. Because I thought it was so special. The song's always been so special because it just encapsulates this picture of New York in my mind, and almost like how you live there, and you live like you're gone, but you still like can taste it and see it and smell it. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Like any city, place you've left, you still can all the feelings can wash over you. And whenever I hear that song, it just reminds me of walking on getting lost in New York City. And finding love and all everything, you know what I mean?
And so many things happened to you while you were lost in New York City.
Oh man,
many things.
Like, bye-bye taxis.
My favorite thing in New York was like just starting at a bar and getting lost. That was my favorite thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, we could go down the list. There was like the poop on the rail,
but that was a homeless guy.
And then there was falling asleep on the stoops and the guy taking your money.
No, I got beat up by some cops.
Beat up by cops.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Hit by two taxis.
I got hit by a couple of taxis.
Yeah, you got doored a lot.
And there's the dreaming quality, the lovely New York. And he comes back with black and blue. And
dude, anything bad? Is something wrong with my brain? I only remember good things. So I don't even think about this kind of stuff. Literally just rose-colored glasses in my mind.
Right, Brian, that's so backwards because we're wired to remember the bad things, so we don't do it. Like it's rare that we remember the good things. If you're not, you're working against evolution here, I think is what I'm getting at.
Like whatever was between like the cave.
We reached the zenith, and then Brian is like the
I still grunted. I still grunted people and expected to understand me.
Oh, I love it. You know what? I'm so glad you guys stuck with that track and for whatever had to happen to you. It is a beautiful one. And so much on here. Hey, Zach, I'll close up with this too. You'd released a record recently too. Did you find that that had an influence on how you approach this record? Does doing a solo one like that have any effect?
For sure. I think just, it's funny actually, the guy that I talked to about this was Jim James. I think it made the work that we do together like my ideas were like a little less precious, and I was able to actually like see and hear my co-creators in a way that maybe I didn't allow myself to do in past records. And I think it also just like, I don't know if I would have agreed to us self-producing it if I hadn't like done that little solo thing, because it just like shook the dust a little bit.
It's so hard. I've been a very proponent for him to make a record for a long time, because we put, you know, we make 15 songs every 2-3 years. That's not fair for a songwriter. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to put other stuff out. And then coming back to this one, I could tell a thing, because he was just like game for whatever. It was really fun. It was not that he wasn't. It was just a different vibe altogether, because he felt like he was planting those seeds elsewhere where they should be, you know. So
yeah, well, again, everything that's led into it, this is one of my favorite albums that you guys have done so far, and I really mean that. So, and it's got one of the best titles, let's say it correctly, Love Songs for Losers.
Yes,
we're gonna stick the landing here at the end. Y'all, thank you so much for catching up again. It's always great to see you all. Congrats on this one. I really mean it.
Thanks. Right on.
We'll see you in Louisville, bud.
Thanks, Kyle. All right, man.
Now I'm going to include a couple other interviews that I've had with Lone Bello through the years. This first one, we'll go back to 2017. This interview came after a couple years in an upheaval. After their 2015 record, Then Came the Morning, what seemed like nonstop touring, the trio found themselves in need of downtime and a gut check as to whether they even wanted to continue. So a change of scenery was prescribed, with the idea of moving the whole band to Nashville, which might not seem like that big of a deal until you take into account that each of them had families to relocate. So once they get that all done, the band hit the studio with Dave Cobb, getting another surprise during the recording. So let's do this part two of Kyle Meredith with The Lone Bello.
It doesn't actually feel all that long ago that the last record came, but I guess it has now. It's been like 2 years, right?
It's been forever. It's been way too long. Yeah, this process took a while of making this record. I think that's one of the reasons why it felt so long.
what happened? I mean, I guess I'm looking for the timeline at the beginning here, because it just didn't even seem like you guys had any downtime this time around, but I guess you did. Like, when did the last record end, and what happened? Why was it such a long process?
Well, for one, we all moved down to Nashville, Tennessee. So everybody moved their families down, and that was just a huge transition personally for everyone. And then just trying to figure out who to make the record with and where. And we ended up going with Dave Cobb down at this place, RCA Studios in Nashville. Once the record was finished and we were ready to release it, Kaneen announced to the band that she was pregnant, which is awesome. So we put everything on hold so that she could, be healthy, have the baby. And he's here now. He's going to be on the road with us somehow. So we'll figure all that out. Maybe it wasn't that long ago. It was just so much life has happened. So it's felt that way.
I mean, you grew a beard. That's a lot of life in that beard. There is a lot of beard there in those pictures.
Yeah, I grew it and shaved it. It came and went.
It's already
gone.
It's
like a bad habit.
What was the reason to head down to Nashville? And especially, I mean, you're not kidding. To move just, you and your family to do a move is usually a big undertaking. To move multiple families, what was the conversation that led you guys to say, and let's uproot everything and everybody?
Well, we've been touring pretty hard for a few years. And I've got four little ones. I have three little girls and a boy. And I just started having some conversations with some fellow musicians and just hearing some rumors of how logistically it's just Nashville, I mean, and Louisville for that matter, are just located in the country, just in a better place to tour from than Brooklyn. So let's say Nashville is like the centerpiece of a flower, and you drew five petals around it. And those five petals were like five tour routes that you could do in America, not including California. You can basically be like an overnight drive away from your family almost anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
So you can spend a lot more time home. And it was reaching that point of just, I was like, man, you know, I'm grateful for the work I get to do. I'm grateful for music. I'm grateful for being able to tour, but I don't want to have an unhealthy balance here. And I don't know. I guess like when my kids get old enough, I want to be able to tell them that I did everything I could to be there and to know them. So that was it for me. And it was really difficult leaving Brooklyn. It's still difficult right now. We had such an incredible community of people there that we have been through hell and high water with. They're all still there. So we're just taking it a day at a time.
I get that from your writing a lot because, you know, the one thing I've connected with you and your lyrics is always about the complexities of relationships. It seems to be, I get from it. I don't know if that's how you feel about your own writing, that, you know, is a general theme that you hit on, you know, and maybe that's a really broad term anyway, because maybe every theme is about the complexities of relationships. But is that what works its way into these songs as well? Like, I get that from the title track. I even get that from, you know, the first single, too.
Yeah. I mean, we went through a thing with Brian that's in the band where he just needed to get some help and get off the road for a little while. And that was during the time that we were supposed to be making the record. And we had to make this decision to put our health and friendship in front of even like the studio that we had already, they had set aside their time for us to make the record there for like 30 days. Dave Cobb was ready to go. He's a very busy producer. I mean, right after us, I think he had like Stapleton and then Isbell.
Right.
Like, bam, bam. And he was just really gracious with us and we figured it out. But I think that just going through those trials and tribulations of friendship and even, you know, even like work and trying to pay the bills and putting your buddy's well-being in front of that, I think made it into these songs a little bit. And it was kind of just like a gut check of, do we still truly care about each other and the people that we get to sing in front of? So I think, I don't, maybe it's like a natural thing that happens in the human condition, but I'm really grateful that we had this, like, just this shift in our hearts and minds. And we've been able to be off the road for a while since Kaneen was having a little one. So me and Brian actually like did solo stuff and just had a lot of fun. And we can't wait to get back to it. And it starts just in a few days.
Yeah. So. I mean, that makes sense now when I look at the title, Walking Into a Storm, because the word I center in on there is the word into, which is obviously something that, you know, that doesn't sound safe at all. That doesn't sound fun. But
yeah,
it makes
exactly.
sense in your context.
I think, I mean, there's another song on the record called Deeper in the Water that's just about that same thing. Like, here we go, like walking out deeper into this river of life and friendship and work. And is it worth it? Is what we're doing adding beauty to the world while we're alive? Or, you know, are we just creating white noise? And I mean, I think that's a question that anybody should ask themselves in any, not just line of work, but just like, you know, as a friend or a father or a husband or whatever, you know? So yeah, that it's a pretty heavy record. I mean, we had a blast making it. We ended up making it in like 7 days. And Dave Cobb sat in on acoustic guitar on every track. We all sat around in a circle and did it, and just really truly had a blast. There's a lot of fun songs. I mean, I think it's a radio single called "Time's Always Leaving."
That's the one we're playing.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. Thank you. Yeah. And the live version of that has taken a different form, and it kind of goes out into the ether of insanity. So yeah, it's gonna rule. It's gonna be so fun just to see what people think, and if you know, it just sits with people.
Yeah,
can't wait.
When I first heard that, and I you know, it's the interplay of the lead vocals and those background vocals dancing around each other, like, that was my first thought, is that live version of it, like, oh, that's gonna be fun.
And that snare drum that just drives a hammer through your forehead, either it might be a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, I'm always just so impressed by everything you guys do. And again, this record, from even just from the two tracks I've heard, sounds so great. And we're looking forward to having you back in town, man. We really are. It's so much fun every single time.
Dude, thank you. And I know I've said this to you before, but we truly love Louisville. I mean, I don't say that about every town we go to, I promise. There's something special there. It's you guys have a real beautiful thing going, and we feel it every time we're there. So thank you for helping support what we do.
It's our pleasure.
We're honored to do it.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. All right, Zach, I'll let you get back to your coffee and new
course. All right, Kyle, I'll see you in a few days.
All right, man. We'll do it.
All right, man.
All right,
bye. Tour set, pop.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
And then for part three, we'll head back to 2015 when I was speaking to the trio about their album Then Came the Morning. We also got into religion and faith in music, life on the road, and metaphorical weather as well. So part three, Kyle Meredith with The Lone Bellow.
The Lone Bellow! Back with a new record, Then Came the Morning. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have made another small masterpiece.
Oh, man.
At this point, you can quit, and I'm sure in 25 years, you'll be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame without ever trying anything again.
Holy cow. You've been talking to my mom?
Yeah, I have. She says hi.
She wrote cool.
Postcards, everything. No, this is such a cool record because I guess, you know, coming from the debut and everything and for what it meant and for all the places that it put you guys and what I mean is in those categorical boxes and everything, this one comes out and it's not that. Then Came the Morning. Doesn't seem like it's the self-titled record. It seems like it's so different. Mm. Was that important to you guys? Was that actually on your mind to say we can't be that
from the beginning? Yeah, we just wanted to rethink how we were playing our instruments, playing acoustics, electrics, and like really like be intentional about the words we write, the melodies we sing, and the things we play, you know.
So it even came down to the words, like even beyond that. Like.
Yeah, I think so.
And Brian made a hard line rule about strumming. So there's like several songs that I wanted to strum so badly.
Yeah.
It's like none.
No, sorry.
No.
All riffs?
No.
All.
No, not like that. You know, I just felt like it was like a lot of times, and it's a beautiful time in music that we came in. A lot of times. A lot of that space that's beautiful on songs that can really help build tension, are just filled with, a strumming guitar, which I love it. There's strumming on the record. It's just like sometimes it's almost like you wanna find another way to do it.
Right.
You know,
don't lean on the usual crutches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it did work out, and I know. I mean, it's been talked about. You know, you guys were placed in the new folk revival and everything, and that's the cool thing about this is because it's not that. This is not a folk record. It's not a country record. It's not a rock record. You know, whatever it is, it's you know, cool. And that's what I said. It's, you know, to go into that and saying how do you not do that? How do you not fall into those trap falls of the stuff you know how to do?
I mean, one of the things that was on our minds when we were working on all of the instrumentation and everything was we really just wanted each song to just like lend itself to whatever instrumentation wanted to be on there. So like sometimes that meant like French horn and flute, but we had the time to have some fun and really go down the rabbit holes together.
The luxury of time.
Yeah, it was.
And it was, you know, amazing. Aaron Dessner producing and almost becoming like the sixth member of the band.
Yeah.
Wasn't too bad either.
But he's not here tonight.
No, he's not.
You're going to be in the band. You got to put in the work. There has been a lot of time on the road. It didn't seem like there was a lot of downtime in between. You all have families. Was it to the point where you're going, do we have to do a second record? Because once you get off and you're there, it seems like now you know, before the second record comes out, now you know what it takes to be in a band. Like, was that hard? Was that difficult to say, let's keep going?
I mean, we had like 40 songs that we had written that we were really excited about.
Yeah.
And the prospect of being able to go into the studio, a situation like a Dreamland with Aaron, it was really exciting. It didn't feel like work to me. It just felt like being a part of something. I was just like a piece of a little puzzle.
Yeah. But as far as being away from everybody and stuff like that, like, have you guys kind of figured out how to be a human being on the road when you're separated like that?
Not quite. But I think we have with our significant others, our friends, our community back home, we have figured out how to our expectations are kind of in the right place for how to live life. So it's a better than, we have to do everything. It's better than that. It's like we kind of know what to expect and we can plan our lives and not just get caught up in a whirlwind kind of thing. You know?
It's kind of nice. There are two themes I know that stood out a lot to me on the new record that came in the morning. One of them is faith. And I listened to that, and what jumps out at me at first part is there was a time when a lot of bands would have shied away from saying, you know, we have faith and we're going to sing it in a song. You know, there are lots of references throughout the record, sometimes cloaked and sometimes very obvious. Did that ever play a part for you guys where you've ever thought, I don't know, can we do biblical references? Can we do this or that? You know, did that ever get, you know, were you ever afraid of that?
I don't think you ever want fear to be a motivating factor when you're songwriting. I think we try to be honest and we try to write from what we really do believe, but also you don't want to be, at least some people do, I think, but us, we don't want to be polarizing for the sake of being polarizing. So we are very intentional about how we talk about it, but yeah, it's not something that I think has to do with fear.
Because you don't come across as like it's not like a Christian rock band or something like that.
No. I mean,
this is something more very personal.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I love the grimace in that, too.
Like, you just gotta be yourself.
Yeah.
You would get really, really bored singing the songs over and over again. If you don't believe in them, just be like, why am I leaving my kids 3 weeks at a time? Like, it just wouldn't, it wouldn't pan out. I would need to do something else with my life.
There's a lot of weather on this record, too. There's storms. There's cold. There's metaphorical weather.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And literal weather.
We are in a van a lot of the time, driving through all kinds of weather.
That's the point, though, when I can look and say, is everything all right? You know, a metaphorical storm isn't the happiest thing, to project. You know, what was going on in the background that you got to say, ugh,
you know. Yeah. Life.
Life.
I mean, sometimes it's just hard to be a human.
Yeah.
And it's normal. And you have good days and bad days. And that's the honest thing about it. If you want to push it under the rug, you can. But I think it's important to share it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, with our crowds or with music in general, you know.
Wear it on your sleeve.
Why not?
And you don't mind singing it over and over, putting that sleeve out there.
Yeah.
Do you ever get to a point where you have to act? Do you have to act out the emotions? Are you able to still to kind of cut into all those emotions?
I think if we ever had to act out an emotion, it would be like a red flag.
Yeah.
Of like, what's my motivation here? Yeah, I guess
it's because, you guys' live shows have become kind of legendary for as much as you guys put into them and everything.
Oh, thank
for
you.
Some entertainers, though, that's, you know, they come in and say, this is how you be a rock star. You know, this is how you do it. And then for some people, apparently, that's, you can't even help it.
We're not good actors.
Yeah. And we're not cool, so.
I don't think that's right. His mom thinks you're very cool.
Yeah, my mom does too, but that's about it.
My dad.
Well, I love this record. It is ridiculously good.
Thanks for listening to it.
Yeah, it's so great to see you guys again.
You too.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Thanks, dude.
And my thanks to the Lone Bellow, Zach, Kaneen, Brian. The brand new album is called Love Songs for Losers. Thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. 3 new interviews sent to you every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media spots, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all 3 of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I know, you're sideways too.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.